The Senate Health and Social Services Committee, I'd like to call to order at 1:30 p.m. on Monday, February 19, 2018. We're meeting today in the Capitol Building, room 205. Please remember to silence your cell phones as a courtesy. Committee members present in attendance today are Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Geisel, Senator Machicki, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Wilson. This afternoon, we'll hear and take public testimony on Senate Bill 124, Abortion Procedures, Child Surrender, by Senator Geisel. This is our first time hearing the bill. I'd like to ask Senator Geisel and invite her staff, Kari Knorr, to the table, and you may present when ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for hearing the bill today. I'm just going to move this computer thing out of my way. There we go. For the record, I'm State Senator Kathy Geisel, representing Senate District N. Let's see, I need a keyboard to change the slides. Great, thank you, Kari. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 124 offers mothers who, for one reason or another, are faced with a crisis pregnancy, and this will give them another option. So the bill, just briefly, I'll cover what the bill does. It calls for the physician who is performing the abortion, if the baby has reached an age of viability or has that opportunity, possible opportunity for viability, that the physician would give the child, that unborn child, the best opportunity to survive. So you see there a picture of a child born at 21 weeks. So the child that is born alive as a result of an abortion shall receive the same degree of professional skill, care, and diligence. So this is the opposite of a do not resuscitate order, Mr. Chairman. This says that this child should be given all opportunity and health care at the time of birth. The child born alive may be surrendered to a physician or an employee of the hospital or facility where the abortion is performed and would be regarded as a child in need of aid. This assumes, of course, that the parent is not willing or is unable to care for the child. That may not be the case, Mr. Chairman. In fact, the mother may actually want to raise the child. The bill has an effective date of immediately. So, Mr. Chairman, what exactly are we talking about? Well, you see a baby right there in that slide's picture, born at 23 weeks and 4 days. In Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court maintained that the state has an interest in protecting the life of a fetus after viability. That is, after the point at which a fetus is capable of living outside the womb. That's the foundation of this bill, Mr. Chairman, the point of viability, able to survive outside the womb. Further, Roe v. Wade said, with respect to the state's important and legitimate interest in potential life, the compelling point is at viability. This is so because the fetus then presumably has the capability of meaningful life outside the mother's womb. Again, the basis of this bill. Further, Roe v. Wade said state regulation protective of fetal life after viability thus has both logical and biological justifications. It may go so far as to proscribe, forbid, especially by law, abortion during that period, except when necessary to preserve the life or health of the mother. So this bill is all about the definition of viability. Now, in Planned Parenthood of Central Missouri versus Danforth, this was in 1976, the court stated, in Roe, we used the term viable, properly we thought, to signify the point at which the fetus is potentially able to live outside the mother's womb, albeit with artificial aid, and presumably capable of meaningful life outside the mother's womb. Again, Mr. Chairman, viability outside the mother's womb, regardless of fetal age. Whitner versus State of South Carolina, this is 1997. Facing the issue of when a fetus is entitled to protection, the court held that a viable fetus was a person for the purposes of the Children's Code in the state of South Carolina. Again, viability. So what are we actually talking about here, Mr. Chairman? You know, most people aren't really all that informed about what's happening as a child is developing in utero. This is a quick little graphic that shows you at week 3, the heart begins to beat. At week 5, vital organs are forming. Week 6, brain waves. Week 8, eyelids form. And week 9, they're sucking thumb and yawning. But let's look in more detail. So this picture right here, these are taken from Mayo, by the way, the Mayo Foundation. This particular drawing is a fetal development at 14 weeks after conception. So, Mr. Chairman, this is right after the first trimester. It's between 8 to 12 weeks. Every organ is in place. The baby has teeth and fingernails. Arms and legs are well formed, you can see that. Ears and eyes are forming. The nose is forming. You can hear a heartbeat, absolutely. And sex organs begin to become more clear. In addition, you see in the text that the formation of fingerprints and footprints are beginning to develop at this point. So, Mr. Chairman, just again, this is at 14 weeks. Now, prior to this time, the method of abortion is generally a vacuum-type procedure. In other words, just simply vacuuming out the contents. But by this point of 14 weeks, the baby is actually becoming such size that that procedure often cannot be done any longer. And consequently, after this time, a procedure is being done called dismemberment. And we'll talk about that a bit more later. So here we have a baby at 23 weeks. So now we're talking at 23 weeks, we're talking at close to 6 months. But during the time between that other picture and this one, the eyes have begun blinking at about 4 months of age. The heart and blood vessels were fully formed at about 4 months. And fingerprints were fully developed by 4 months of age. Mr. Chairman, when I applied for my concealed carry permit and my nursing license, I had to submit to a criminal background check, which required my fingerprints. Fingerprints are viewed as a unique identifier for each human being. And by 4 months, and certainly by 6 months, these babies have fingerprints, unique identifiers as a human being. By 5 months, before this picture would have been happened. By 5 months of age, this baby would be sucking his thumb, stretching, yawning, making faces. The mother certainly can feel this little person moving. And an ultrasound would identify the sex of the baby. In addition, by 20 weeks, we have documented that these unborn children can feel pain. So this picture is at 23 weeks. And so at about this time, the inner ear is fully developed. And the baby responds to sound by either movement or an increase in heart rate. So here we are at 27 weeks. So this is closing in on 8 months of age. You see the eyelids can partially open. They have eyelashes. The central nervous system is functioning. They're making breathing movements. And they have some body temperature control. They weigh about 4 pounds at this point. Here we have 8 months of age. Eyes wide open, red blood cells, toenails, fingernails, beginning to form a fat layer. The brain is completely developed. The lungs are nearly developed. Mr. Chairman, at this point, this child in Alaska would still be eligible for an abortion procedure. The state of Alaska has no limit on gestational age and abortion. But as you can see, Mr. Chairman, if the weight at this point is approaching 4 pounds, the only way that this child could be forcefully removed from the uterus would be through a procedure called dismemberment. And I won't describe it in detail, but I think you can Imagine what that is. I'm not trying to make this overly dramatic, though I know that some folks will. But just wanted you to understand what these babies look like and the weeks that we're talking about. So again, the bill, very simply, gives the best opportunity for an unborn child who has reached viability to survive birth, requiring professional skill and care to be given to the child. Now, the argument will be made, these children really can't survive. Well, in fact, medical science improves daily, Mr. Chairman, and certainly in this committee we talk about healthcare a lot. And this chart, though not totally current, but fairly current, shows the viability statistically. Certainly, it's more than 50% opportunity after 25 weeks, Mr. Chairman, and that's right about 6 months gestational age. So what do other states do? Well, let's take a look. This, again, is not the latest information. But in blue underneath, you see states that actually have weeks of gestational age, which identifies viability. This is not the most current information. In fact, 23 states, this needs updating, 23 states have time-specific dates of viability, and 20 states just use the term protection at viability. Now, in the red words above, you see the foreign countries that have limits on abortion procedures, again, these being their identified ages of potential viability. And this happens to be accurate, according to the latest information I have. The Guttmacher Institute is actually a pro-abortion organization, Mr. Chairman. I throw that out there, not trying to form sides here, but to let you know that this is not a right-to-life slide. It's factual information. So, again, this bill gives mothers who for one reason or another are faced with that very difficult choice, another option to deliver a preterm child that has that opportunity of viability of life to be delivered in such a way that they could survive. That mom then may elect to give the child up, to surrender the child, in which case the child will become what we call China or child in need of aid. And the bill has immediate effective date. There are real people, real children today, Mr. President, who have been delivered early and are living healthy, productive lives. Now, this is an interesting bill in that there are interesting groups opposing it, Mr. Chairman. On the one hand, we have, of course, predictability, that Planned Parenthood is opposed to it, of course. But interestingly, the Alaska Right to Life is also opposed to it, Mr. Chairman. I mean, this may seem ironic to you, but it certainly seems ironic and disturbing to me. The reason that that Alaska Right to Life cites for being against this is, first of all, it doesn't ban abortion. Absolutely 100% true. This does not ban abortion. And they opine that this would only save one or two children's lives. And that may be true as well, Mr. President, but I'm reminded of that movie that probably most of us saw, very disturbing movie, difficult to watch, called Schindler's List, the story of Oskar Schindler. He was a businessman, a German, who during World War II saw an opportunity to make lots of money. So he bought a factory that would manufacture earthenware and then a second factory to make munitions. And he employed Jews because it was cheap labor. One day in the city of Krakow, he saw the Nazis slaughtering, murdering the Jews. And he realized what was happening. And he realized that he had the chance to save lives. So he used his fortune to bribe Nazi guards to assign more Jewish workers to his factories so he could save their lives. In the end, after the war was ended, those Jewish survivors gave him a ring in which was inscribed this statement from the Talmud: whoever saves a life, it is considered as if he saved an entire world. Mr. Chairman, that is what this bill is about. Now, this is a picture of one of the survivors, one of the people on Schindler's List. It's the elderly woman sitting in the wheelchair. Margot died on February 7th of this month. She was 99 and a half years old. She had 3 children, 8 grandchildren, and 28 great-grandchildren. Mr. Chairman, she is an example of every life mattering, every life needing that opportunity for life. So, Mr. Chairman, that is what this bill offers. It offers mothers another choice. Instead of having their child in utero dismembered, to actually offer that child the opportunity to be born alive, receive the health care needed, and to live a productive life. So with that, Mr. Chairman, my staff, Kari Noor, is here, and she can go through a sectional with you.
Yes, please.
Yes, for the record, my name is Kari Noor, staff to Senator Giesel. Section 1 of Senate Bill 124 amends AS 1816010 by adding new subsections to provide for a physician to use the method of terminating the pregnancy that best provides for the unborn child to survive outside the mother's womb. It requires health practitioners present at the procedure to exercise the same degree of professional practice and diligence to preserve the life of the viable child born as would be provided to a child born through the course of natural birth. It provides definitions for alive, clinical judgment, fertilization, and fetal age. Section 2 amends AS 1816 by adding a new section that would allow a parent of a child born alive during the process of an abortion to surrender the child to a physician or employee of the hospital. The person to whom the child has been surrendered will notify the Department of Health and Social Services as required under AS 4710013D. Section 3 amends AS 4710011 and adds a provision in the Child in Need of Aid statute to include a child born alive during the termination of a pregnancy whose parent is unwilling or unable to care for the infant. Section 4 adds an applicability provision that states that AS 1816010K through M, added by Section 1, AS 1816012, added by Section 2, and AS 4710011, as amended by Section 3, apply to abortions performed or induced on or after the effective date of those sections, and Section 5 provides for an immediate effective date of this act.
Thank you. Are there any questions from committee members of the bill sponsor at this time?
I have a question.
Senator Machicki.
So I thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Giesel, we've talked a lot about where we stand on abortion. We're both unabashedly pro-life. Just two questions. One is, how many states simply do not allow elective third trimester abortions? Do you know the answer to that? Because I certainly do not. And I may be throwing something at you unfairly here. But as we work through this, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to know how many states have legally upheld their ban of elective abortions in the third trimester.
In the third trimester, 3 states have time-limited abortions. Now, I apologize. Senator Machicki threw the chair. The information I have is that 3 states have identified the third trimester as the stopping point for abortions. Now, recently there was a congressional bill that was frankly just like this bill, with a few exceptions. It had penalties in it, and it had exception for the usual rape, etc. But it did ban most abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy. Senator Machicki threw the chair. This bill did not pass the Senate, though it was a very close count. It was 51 to 46, so it fell short of the 60 vote threshold that it needed. But in the meantime, the U.S. Supreme Court verified the ban on abortion after viability. and I can't recall the date of that. It was not too long ago. After the U.S. Supreme, and it was a close count. It was 5-4. But the U.S. Supreme Court agreed that a ban after viability was appropriate. 8 states passed laws banning abortion, just like this bill, after viability. Only 2 of those states have a bill that is actually in force right now. The other 6 states have their bills, have their laws under court challenge. But 8 states have passed such legislation.
All up, Senator Michigan?
Yeah, my follow-up is just typically, I haven't done the math, does viability occur prior to the third trimester in most cases?
I would refer you back, Senator Michiki, to this slide right here. You can see that by 26 weeks, 60%, and by 24 weeks, actually 50% chance of survival of a preterm delivery. Alaska has no limit in place, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Senator Von Imhoff?
Thank you. At this point, it seems to be it's viability, and so viability is left up to whom? So the definition of viability is left up to whom? And does that, I'm just assuming here for the sake of argument, it's the physician. And if the physician decides, let's say it's a first trimester fetus, and he or she decides it's not viable, does this physician have protections for that decision? Or what? How does it play out, and who? What's the decision tree?
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, this bill places that decision in the physician's hands. It differs from the federal law in that it doesn't define a particular week. The federal law proposed a 20-week time. This bill does not. And the federal bill also proposed a penalty for the physician. This bill does not. I am trusting the ethics of the physician population that we have in Alaska and the sworn duty they have to do no harm.
A follow-up, Senator Von Imhoff?
Do you see a scenario where a physician could be held liable if he or she makes a decision that someone disagrees with in terms of viability?
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, I am not an attorney. I am quite certain that attorneys will find some way, but that's not the intent of the bill, and there's nothing in the bill that creates a liability. It does not specify a weak gestational age.
Okay, last question.
Yes, Senator Von Imhoff.
Do you feel that it would then help to alleviate potential misunderstanding with the intent of the bill by landing on a gestational age like other states have done?
Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, I would love to do that, but I don't know that. This is a high enough bar to reach, even the consideration of viability. I'm certain that there are people in the room that are going to tell you how awful this is. I think you can see from the chart here that certainly 25 weeks is a high likelihood of viability. There are numerous people alive today, children alive today, who were delivered much more preterm than that. That is an option. Certainly I would welcome an amendment to place a time on it. I chose not to put any penalties in. Some people say there should be a penalty. I chose not to do that. I would be amenable to that amendment if someone were to offer it.
Senator Bagage.
I have a couple of questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Giesel, I guess my first question, perhaps following up a little bit on what the question that was just asked, was considering, you know, the impact and the ambiguity around the date and the time, and that question of viability, did you consider the impact it might have on medical malpractice insurance for doctors or those assisting them at the time. Have you considered that impact that it potentially could have on insurance rates or medical malpractice because of the ambiguity of when a doctor has to determine viability?
Senator Begich, to the chair, obstetrics is a high liability profession to begin with. It is left to the judgment of the physician. I don't see that this bill increases their liability in any way.
Thank you. And then a couple more questions, if I may, Mr. Chairman. In the bill, it's the phrase unable or unwilling is used for the woman involved in this. Parent would be unable or unwilling. What if, and this is not meant to be a trick question or anything like that, but what if a parent were willing but unable? What I'm trying to get at is, what do you do in a situation where a parent is willing but unable? Would the state be obligated to place that child in a child in need of aid situation?
Senator Begich, to the chair, there are many parents who feel unable to take care of a child and yet somehow manage and actually raise some pretty wonderful kids. We have a former neurosurgeon in the United States, African-American man who was raised by a mother who couldn't read. And he went on to become a neurosurgeon. Now, that mom, if you asked her, would probably say, you know, this is more than I can do, but she did it. It is the parent who decides whether they're willing and able to raise the child. And that's why the provision is there, for the parent to relinquish custody of the child and the state to step in.
Maybe a two-part question. The bill specifies the form to best survive, the process to best survive, and this is one of the conflicts that I might have with this legislation, in that would this restrict the choices available then to a doctor, which might be less risky for a parent if it is more viable for the fetus at that point to survive? Would it preclude that doctor's use of a procedure that would be less risky for the parent in this instance, because the bill specifies for the fetus to best survive? So I want to get to that specificity, and then I have one last question after this.
Senator Begich, to the chair, I'm struggling a bit to understand your question, but let's just say, what is the method of delivery that the child has the best opportunity to survive? Well, number one, positioning the child in a head-down position and inducing labor and delivering the child the way children are delivered every day. Obviously, if there are placental abnormalities, it might involve a C-section. All of that is up to the experienced and knowledgeable clinician, the physician.
Brief follow-up on that. What I was getting at was, does this mean that the fetus takes preference over the parent in this, the woman who's in the process of having this procedure? I'm just trying to see if there's a preference that a doctor has to make a call as to which is more important.
Senator Begich, to the chair, let's review this scenario. This is a woman who, for one reason or another, is facing that brutal decision of delivering this baby early or the choice of abortion, which in these age weeks that you see on the screen involves the dismemberment of the child's body to remove it from the uterus. So this is a mother's choice. The physician will care for both patients to the best of his ability. I can't predict what those decisions will be. I suspect most likely it will be in favor of the mother.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, just yes, a follow-up for clarification. It's just that the way that the bill is worded, and I need to just dig back in here and find the phrasing, but it specifically says for the fetus to best survive or something to that effect. The words are to best survive. I know that. It's in, and I just want to be clear about that.
Through the chair, Senator Begich. This is Kari Noor, staff to Senator Giesel. If you look on page one of the bill, starting on line 10, it says, the method of terminating the pregnancy does not present a serious risk to the life or health of the pregnant woman. Right there in the bill, sir.
Thank you for that. Very well said, Kari. And then my last question.
Yes, Senator Begich.
And this just deals with, I note the fiscal note in there from Medicaid services, but you mentioned litigation a number of times during your presentation, and of course these issues are always litigated. Is there an estimate from the Department of Law what the litigation might entail for this particular legislation, or is that something that we normally do? I actually don't know the answer to that question, so I'm actually asking the question.
Senator Begich, to the chair, there is no expectation that this would be litigated. And so, no, the Department of Law usually doesn't opine on what litigation might cost. This fiscal note that you have from DHSS, I just saw, and I have not talked with them at all, but it is interesting that they assume that children that are delivered preterm would be disabled. And that's interesting. That's not necessarily the case. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no other questions at this time.
And thank you, Senator Giesel. I had that same question upon the how many children would be in the chances of them being disabled, because that raised my eyebrow as well of that, to have the assumption. I guess this is more of a worst-case scenario type of situation to make sure they don't underestimate the costs, perhaps. And I think that can be taken up in another committee after further investigation of this. Any other committee questions, members' questions at this time, before we go to public testimony? Senator Michiki.
Just wanted to, in the document, which is a great document that I've been trying to find time to review in its entirety, the 2016 Alaska Induced Termination of Pregnancy Statistics, being in this situation alone is a very low probability. If you look on page 6 of that document, it says that nearly all 99.5% induced terminations in Alaska were performed at 13 weeks or less gestational age. In 2013, 91.6% of induced terminations performed in the U.S. involved pregnancies of 13 weeks or less gestational age. Just gives you some idea, and I want to spend more time with this document to get an idea of what the numbers may look like. I am not a supporter of any abortions that are not medically necessary, just my personal feelings. Do support the elimination of the potential of non-medically necessary or elective surgeries occurring in the latter stages, obviously. If I can do a complete ban, I would. And we've got that little Roe v. Wade issue in the way, and then there's reality on dealing with it. But I appreciate the approach of viability. I have to put a little bit more thought into whether that term is clear enough or whether we should go on a amount of weeks. I'm thinking about that, but I appreciate you putting out for us to consider, that's for sure. Thank you, Senator.
Senator Michiki, through the chair, if you also look at page 11 and consider that the first trimester, of course, is that 12 weeks, and several states identify specific weeks, you'll see the number of procedures that are done from 13 weeks forward. Now, the last row on table 8A, page 11 of the 2016 document, says not stated. Those are most likely falling in those later weeks of pregnancy, of gestation. so the clinician chose not to state what the gestational age was. But you can see that it's decreasing, and certainly after about 17 to 20 weeks, we're looking at 6 in 2016. So this is not volumes and volumes. It's about 5.7% would fall into that category in 2016. But as the Talmud said, one who saves a life is as if he saved an entire world. Any further questions?
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Geisel. Thank you, Ms. Knorr. At this time, I'd like to open public testimony. There will be a strict two-minute time limit for testimony. We do have quite a few folks in the room today and folks online to testify. We're going to ask people to try to stay to that 2 minutes and wrap it up as expeditiously as possible. If testifiers go a little bit longer, they may be cut off by the moderator. I'll ask all those who wish to commit to the bill to be courteous and respectful when they're testifying and to appreciate a civil discourse in this matter. At this time, we'll go ahead and open it up to the folks here in Juneau. We'll start with Rachel Gearhart, and if you can remember to state your name and affiliation for the record. And just before you begin, Ms. Gearhart, next up will be Alyssa Curry. You may begin when ready.
Thank you. My name is Rachel Gearhart, and I live in Juneau. And I'm a social worker, and I'm just here representing myself. So thank you for the opportunity to speak. I did peruse the attached documents before coming today, and I did notice that survival rate slide actually has Australian statistics. So you may want to look at statistics that are actually United States survival rate statistics to get more accurate statistics. I am very confused by this bill. I'm confused why the bill's sponsor or anyone else in this room would suggest if a woman and her highly educated medical provider have determined that a termination of her pregnancy is an appropriate and very safe medical procedure for her to have, why her abortion procedure would turn into a delivery for a child that she has determined that she's unable to care for because of any number of perfectly valid reasons that she does not have to justify to me or to you. And this would not just be any delivery, but one of a baby who, if born alive, would likely require significant complex medical care that was referenced in that attached New York Times article as a supporting document for this meeting, would probably not even be available in this state. Providence in Anchorage does have a level 3 NICU, but the closest level 4 NICU is in Seattle. The article, which again is used in support of this bill, very clearly states that many babies, if they make it, will survive with severe handicaps. The bill mentions that these babies would be considered a child in need of aid, case through OCS, as if that were just the easiest, most unburdened system in our state. I would point out that the foster care system is already overburdened with perfectly healthy children. Foster families who can work with children of complex medical needs are not in high supply, nor are adoptive families. And what does it take to be a foster family? I looked on OCS's website. The requirements are health. The foster family must be physically and emotionally capable of caring for children. It continues on, but this would probably be a pretty complex case. And financially, they must have adequate resources to supply the household independent of monthly foster care reimbursements. It's clear to me that if any fetus were to be born alive and turned over to OCS, this fiscal note would be grossly underestimated. Where's the fiscal note to mention their move through the China process in OCS? Where's Medicare mentioned? And it costs billions just to treat one person with cerebral palsy over their lifetime, with estimates of close to $1 million in family expenditures for out-of-pocket expenditures, missed work for appointments and emergencies.
You can this, wrap up here, Mr.
Absolutely. This seems to be only care about them when their children, lifetime costs are ignored. Instead of supporting this bill, please ignore any urge to get in between a woman and her health care provider. Focus on, instead, a workable state budget that supports our state residents who are already in need of safety and security. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next up is Allison Curry. Following her would be Sonia Bernard Gravel. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record, you may begin when ready.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Allison Curry. I'm the legislative liaison with Planned Parenthood Votes Northwest in Hawaii, and I'm a resident of Juneau. And I do stand here today to oppose Senate Bill 124. Planned Parenthood provides high-quality, compassionate, and evidence-based health care, including abortion services, nationwide and here in Alaska. Our providers follow rigorous medical standards and guidelines developed using the most current medical evidence available, including guidance from trusted medical organizations like the Centers for Disease Control, United States Preventive Task Force, or Services Task Force, and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Senate Bill 124 would limit abortions later in pregnancy and restrict doctors' ability to exercise their professional expertise about what is best for their patients. Nearly 99% of abortions take place before 21 weeks, well before fetal viability. In the limited later abortions that do occur, this bill would force physicians to alter how they practice medicine to prioritize the health of the fetus over the health of the woman. It would force healthcare providers to substitute the will of the legislature for their ability to use their medical expertise to treat each of their patients on a case-by-case basis. This is a dangerous, unsafe, and unfounded precedent motivated by politics, not by medicine. This bill attacks women and families already facing the heart-wrenching decision of ending a pregnancy. Abortions later in pregnancy are performed almost exclusively in cases of serious and catastrophic fetal abnormalities. So this bill is a cruel restriction for families already facing tragic circumstances. Thank you so much for your time, for providing comment. We do urge the committee to oppose this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Sonia Bernard-Gravel, followed by Liz Rangel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Sonia Bernard-Gravel. I live in Anchorage, and I'm a student at UAA. I'm here representing myself, and I'm here to testify against Senate Bill 124 because I believe medical procedures should be left to the professional decision of doctors and the desires of their patients. As a young Alaskan woman, I have a very close relationship with my doctor. I trust her medical expertise 100%. It kind of frightens me to think that if this bill is passed, she and other doctors would be limited in the care they are able to provide for their patients. Late-term abortions are almost always exclusively performed in cases where the woman or the fetus are in danger. This bill not only tells the woman that she's incapable of making her own decisions, but it also places yet another child into our already crowded foster care system. I don't think abortion is a topic we go through life expecting to have or need, but for some women, it becomes necessary for their health. I want to thank the Senate Health and Committee, Social Services Committee, for letting me testify today, and I urge you all to vote no on Senate Bill 124.
Thank you. Next up is Liz Rangel, followed by Brene Baker. Liz, if you can start when ready, state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Liz Rangel. I'm a UAA student, and I'm representing myself as a constituent of District L. I'm here to testify against Senate Bill 124 because I find it inappropriate for the decisions on women's bodies to be made in a political setting. Bills like Senate Bill 124 have the sole purpose of placing obstacles between women and their access to a safe abortion. This bill is purposely left vague and encourages physicians to place a woman's life and well-being second to a fetus's. It's a dangerous bill, and I want to see the Senate value Alaskan women and their lives when you all vote. I want to thank the Senate Health and Social Services Committee for allowing me to testify today. And as an Alaskan woman, I urge you to vote no on Senate Bill 124.
Thank you. Brene Baker is next, followed by Alyssa Quintain.
Hello. My name is Brene Baker. I'm from Fairbanks, District B. I expect all of you to oppose this bill. It's offensive, condescending, medically inaccurate, and dangerous. This bill is a waste of the time and resources of the constituents and taxpayers. I expect you to oppose this bill, and let's focus on doing actual work to better our communities and state. Thank you.
Yeah. After Ms. Quintine will be a Casey Kasroff.
All right. Good afternoon, committees of the chair. My name is Alyssa Quinton. I'm a constituent from Fairbanks in District A, and I'm here to urge the Senate to oppose Bill 124. This bill is legally ambiguous, medically dangerous, and completely inappropriate to pass and enforce, and I have four reasons. The terminology of this bill is medically ambiguous and conflicts with the medical professional's ability to provide adequate care for their patients. The language of this bill confuses the procedure of removal versus live birth, and it does not define what survival will look like for the fetus. This is concerning because it poses an immense threat to both the pregnant woman and fetus. Now that patient will not be able to choose what her procedure will be, and now the fetus will be delivered prematurely as close to 8 to 20 weeks, and there is no guarantee that the fetus can survive. And they would also force the parents not only into a dire and emotional situation, but a life-threatening situation. This also burdens state and legal agencies, such as Child Protective Services, or OCS, now to care for a premature or medically sensitive infant that they may not have the medical or professional capacity to handle. This is not, to me, a family-oriented bill. This is not a medically supportive bill. This is an attack on reproductive rights and access. This is an attack on our medical staff and providers to undermine their expertise. This is an attack on our state agencies, and we need to focus our efforts to providers, agencies, and organizations that support access to safe, sound, and consensual care so that our parents can make the best decisions for them and their families. So I urge you, please oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Casey Kasroff, followed by Rose O'Hara Jolly.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Casey Kasroff. I'm a constituent of Senate District C, and I'll be testifying on behalf of myself. I'm 19 years old and a freshman at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. When I was 16, my best friend was raped on the UAF campus. This violent dorm room assault made me painfully aware of my vulnerability as a woman. Now I carry my keys like daggers through the Fred Meyer parking lot, and I check my reflection in dark windows to see if the person walking behind me looks like a threat. I live in a world where the attacks on my body come from all sides, and having my government attempt to limit the power of doctors to treat my body with the respect it deserves is unacceptable. SB 124 is an unreasonable, medically unsound, and politically motivated attack on my bodily autonomy. SB 124 is ambiguously written with legally and medically incorrect terminology. SB 124 sets a dangerous precedent by substituting the agenda of politicians in a situation where only my doctor's expertise should be present. It's insensible to hold hearings on fundamentally unnecessary legislation while Alaska is in the midst of a budget crisis. I advise you to focus on solving Alaska's real problems instead of trying to pass a medically unsafe bill. As I said before, SB 124 is unreasonable and medically unsound. Legislators, I urge you to think of the women in your life who live in a dangerous world. We are counting on you to defend our bodies, our minds, and our futures. Please vote no on SB 124. Thank you.
Thank you. After Rose O'Hara Jolly, we'll have Hannah Hill be next on deck. Ms. O'Hara Jolly, if you can state your name and affiliation for the record, you may begin when you're ready.
Hello, my name is Rose O'Hara Jolly, and I live in Fairbanks, Alaska, District B. I'm here on behalf of myself. I would like to state that I oppose Senate Bill 124. I support all of the reasons given before me. But I wanted to, on a personal note, say that as someone whose family survived the Holocaust and many more of my family members did not, that I find it personally offensive to create a false comparison between the Holocaust and those that survived and my right to my body's autonomy and the state's decisions in it. So I hope that you oppose Senate Bill 124. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Hannah Hill.
Good Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Hannah Hill, and I live in Senate District B. That's in Fairbanks. I'm here to testify on behalf of myself and in opposition of Senate Bill 124. It's my opinion that Senate Bill 124 serves to substitute the knowledge of medical practitioners for personal ideology using medically inaccurate and legally vague language. Senate Bill 124 skirts the fact that the vast preponderance of so-called late-term abortions are performed because of imminent maternal death or fetal abnormalities that are incompatible with life. Per the Guttmacher Institute, 9% of abortions are performed after the first trimester, and of that, about 1% are after the 21-week mark, which is just, I think, a statistical importance that was not acknowledged in the presentation earlier. They say that the personal is political, but in this case, I think that the political is personal. I encourage this committee to reject SB 124 and leave personal health care decisions to the people and to the medical care of their doctors. So thank you for this opportunity to testify and be a part of my government.
Thank you.
Take a brief at ease. We'll now go to the phones, and we'll go with Cindy Roger. And Palmer? Cindy, if you can state your name and affiliation for the record, you may begin when ready. And remember, you have 2 minutes for testimony. Cindy, you may want to take yourself off of mute if you're on mute.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I am Cindy Brodiger, and I'm representing myself. I'm an abolitionist and a follower of Jesus Christ. I oppose this bill strongly because it does not recognize the child in the womb to be in need of aid at the time the abortionist is in the very act of murdering them, unless the child survives the murder attempt on their life. Then, as the title states of SB 124, the child moved from the womb alive after an abortion may be a child in need of aid. I ask, what a sick, twisted thinking this is. In Romans 13, Paul viewed governing authorities to be established by God as ministers of God with purpose to restrain evil and promote a just and peaceful social order. And now let me take you to God's word, because he's the one who is the authority, and he's the one who has placed Senator Deeser in authority, regardless if she recognizes it or not. Isaiah 10, 1 and 2, woe to those enacting crooked statute and writing oppressive laws to keep the poor from getting a fair trial and to deprive the needy among my people of justice, so that the widows can be the spoil and they can plunder the fatherless. In Proverbs 24, a foolish scheme is sin and a mocker is detestable to people. If you do nothing in a difficult time, your strength is limited. Rescue those being taken off to death and save those stumbling towards the slaughter. If you say, but we did not know about this, won't he who protects your life know? Won't he repay a person according to his work? See, God is sovereign. He is all-knowing, and he sees right through this. We are to take care of our children. And God does not place a value of the child outside of the womb or the viability based on the child's age or stage of development.
Cindy, if you could wrap up, your time is over.
I'm sorry?
If you could wrap up, your time, you're over 2 minutes.
Yes, yes. Psalms 94:16. Who stands up for me against the wicked? Who takes stand for me against evildoers? And then I'll finish with Proverbs 22:8. Sowing in to injustice will reap calamity. So it will not go well with us if we continue to mock God versus repent where he may relent of calamity. This is a wicked and evil bill. HB 250, Alaska Life at Conception Act. Senator Geisel, I plead with you to mirror this bill, make it a Senate bill. It will abolish abortion in Alaska, and we won't have this discussion of when, how, and why to abort, murder children in the womb. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Next up is Patrick Martin from Wasilla. Mr. Martin, if you want to state your name and affiliation for the record, you may begin when ready.
Yes, thank you, Senator Wilson. My name is Patrick Martin. I'm calling in representation of Alaska Right to Life, and I am grateful for the opportunity to talk to you today about SB 124. And, you know, the first thing I'm going to hit on is the reference to Schindler's List, as Senator Geisel was saying that Alaska Right to Life may have some kind of skewed idea about what she's trying to accomplish here. You know, Schindler did not create the laws that started or perpetuated the slaughter of the innocent Jews. But by creating two classes of preborn babies, SB 124 takes the role of the Nazi government and not the role of the courageous Mr. Schindler, who risked his life and sacrificed his wealth on behalf of those people that he had previously held a blind eye to. And Alaska Right to Life would like to submit that the best opportunity to survive an abortion is simply to not be aborted. The protection must be applied to all babies at risk of abortion. And in order to do that, recognizing that life begins at conception and affording all life from the point of conception to natural death and beyond to natural death. To natural birth and then beyond to natural death would guarantee the rights of the preborn and protect them from abortion. Alaska Right to Life's contention that SB 124 is built on the same faulty logic that Sarah Weddington used when arguing Roe versus Wade, that the preborn fetus has no rights and can be killed at any time up to birth, and that the babies that have been born somehow now magically are considered persons and then have constitutional rights no longer withheld, they cannot be killed. Sarah Weddington, who argued on behalf of Roe in the Roe versus Wade case, actually admitted, or I should say conceded, that to kill a born baby would be tantamount to infanticide and murder, and the only thing that she used as a dividing line between the preborn and the born baby was the birth canal. It's still the same baby, deserving of the same rights and the same protection, regardless of where it resides. It's important to note,
Mr. Martin, your time. If you could wrap up your final statements, you're over the 2-minute time.
I'll do that. Thank you. So going back to the principles of protecting preborn babies, Alaska Right to Life opposes SB 124 because it creates two classes of preborn babies, those that a mother can kill and those that a mother cannot kill. So Alaska Right to Life calls on the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to not pass this bill, and we stand in opposition to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease. Back on the record. Thank you, Mr. Martin, for your testimony. Next up, we have Rick Small from Palmer. Mr. Small, you may begin your testimony. Remember to state your name and affiliation, and plan on 2 minutes for testifying today.
Thank you. My name is Rick Small from Palmer. I am representing myself as a representative of the Lord Jesus Christ. God Almighty created humans in His image. He very clearly and emphatically stated, "You shall not murder." He also did not place any size or age limits on His direct command. HB 250 should be the bill being discussed in the Senate today. I've been pleading for months with my Senator, Shelley Hughes, to to introduce an exact duplicate of HB 250 into the Senate. She has sinfully refused. Therefore, even though he is not my senator, I am calling upon Senator David Wilson to do what is right and as soon as possible this week to introduce an exact duplicate of HB 250 and 251 into the Senate. Five Alaskan babies are being murdered in Alaska today, and the Alaska legislature has the primary responsibility of protecting innocent humans in this state. The time for justice is always now. Human abortion is a hate crime, and silence is consent. As a man from Fairbanks told me recently, if we don't abolish human abortion, we are going to be judged by Almighty God. The right to murder children is not in the U.S. Constitution. It is also not in the Alaska Constitution. And even if it was, our obligation is to our Creator, not some stupid court that says we have to allow the murder of children in our state. Abortion must be abolished. SB 124 isn't anywhere near accomplishing that. It should be gutted and replaced by the exact wording from HB 250. Thank you, and may God have mercy on us for allowing this Holocaust, 10 times worse than the Nazi Holocaust, to continue in our state.
Thank you, Mr. Small. Next on the phone is Charity Carmody from Anchorage. If you may start your testimony when you're ready.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. My name is Charity Carmody. I'm calling on behalf of Beacon Hill. I am the founder and president of Beacon Hill, which is a licensed child placement agency in the state of Alaska and also a nonprofit that deals in all things child welfare and runs the Heart Gallery of Alaska, which recruits for adoptive homes for children who have their rights, their family's rights have been terminated. I am calling in support of this bill. I believe that as a person who has fought for my entire career for the rights of children to be protected, that this bill does do that. It deals with the issue of viability. And in all cases, we as a state try to protect children that are most at risk. And this bill, I believe, does that in good form. So we are in support of it wholeheartedly. I'm a mother of three children, a foster mother, an adoptive mother, and I have a son with cerebral palsy. So I think I can adequately say that I do believe this protects the rights of children and all children, even female children. So when I hear women say that this is against the female gender, I would say that I disagree wholeheartedly, that this actually helps protect the female gender and, in you know, just keeps them from being being aborted or born and then not protected after they are alive. So I would encourage you to consider supporting this bill. I am in Senator Begich's district, and that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on the phone is Melissa Goldstein from Anchorage. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Melissa Goldstein, and I'm a legal fellow at the ACLU of Alaska.
And Melissa, you may need to speak up a little bit more. We're having trouble hearing you.
Okay. Is this better?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So thank you for allowing me the opportunity to provide testimony today. I'm a legal fellow at the ACLU of Alaska. Abortion is a safe and legal medical procedure, and it's a fundamental right grounded in the right to privacy. SB 124 infringes on that right, and it may force women seeking to terminate a pregnancy to undergo a dangerous, invasive medical procedure instead of one of the many safe alternatives that are available. It also interferes with physicians' medical judgment and the doctor-patient relationship because it compels physicians to perform procedures that aren't necessarily in accordance with medical judgment, are dangerous, unnecessary, and convey no benefits. Moreover, many hospitals in Alaska have restrictive abortion policies already, and these policies would mean that induction wouldn't even be possible in those facilities. SB 124 is also unenforceable. This is because it doesn't specify a gestation period to which it applies, nor does it specify how physicians and patients should comply with the law. And even if it weren't vague, the United States Supreme Court has stated that the state has a legitimate interest in seeing to it that abortion, like any other medical procedure, is performed under circumstances that ensure maximum safety for the patient. We are concerned that SB 124 is unconstitutional, and in the past, we have successfully litigated unconstitutional laws that target women's reproductive rights. More recently, the state of Alaska paid $1 million in attorney's fees to us and our partners from a similar type of litigation. And I'd just like to add on a personal note, my grandfather was on Schindler's List. I find the comparisons from a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy to what my grandfather went through on Schindler's List to be deeply offensive. Oscar Schindler was not a good man. He may not have shipped my grandfather off to Auschwitz, but my aunt was nearly killed working in his factory from starvation. So I find it very offensive on a personal note. Right. Whereas this bill is forcing women to undergo dangerous procedures. So I don't see the connection. But anyway, I would like to thank you for the opportunity to allow me to provide testimony today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Goldstein. Next on the phone is Tom Lakosh.
I gather that was for Tom Lakosh?
Yes.
Thank you very much. My name is Tom Lakosh. I would like to testify on SB 124. While I appreciate the Senator's efforts to see that support is offered by the state to prematurely born children, I'm afraid that the attempt is also unconstitutionally restrictive of women's right to privacy. I believe that the state, that this bill should be amended to ensure that a person who has to a woman who wants to surrender a premature child can. I think imposing upon physicians or a woman to disclose her medical condition is unconstitutional. Essentially, you're giving the right of the state to show up at a doctor's office with a speculum. And Ms. Giesel, I don't think you want me to show up in your office, an OBGYN office with a speculum, to determine the age of an accurate age of a child. Do you become liable if the woman dies in that attempt to deliver a viable child? Are you liable for reckless endangerment and for the child dying subsequent to being born? You've got all kinds of problems here, and all I fully believe in the sanctity of life. This is not a viable piece of legislation here, and our budget cannot sustain repeated challenges to the constitutionality of lousy legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll go to Cordova, to the LIO there, and William Deaton, if you could state your name and affiliation for the record and plan for 2 minutes for testifying.
Have myself.
Oh, there you are, Mr. Deaton.
Yes, my name is William Deaton, and I am testifying for myself here in Cordova, Alaska, and I'm 16 years old. I would like to see this bill amended to say that a physician besides the abortionist be there on hand to save the child if the child survives the abortion. Because to be true and truthful here in this matter, I don't trust an abortionist who is attempting to murder the child to attempt to save them after they are outside of the womb. I support this idea, but like I said, I would like to see it amended. I am completely pro-life, and I would love to see all of abortions outlawed. Everybody has the right to life, as declared in the U.S. Constitution in Amendment Number 14 and in the Alaska State Constitution, and I believe that that includes the preborn. If this bill saves even one, I support it. I would just like to further ensure that child is truly saved and not left to die in a plastic bag somewhere, as they are currently in some places. It is past time to end abortion. Therefore, please amend the bill, as I've said, and support it. The U.S. is currently one of 7 countries that allows abortions past 20 weeks, which, as previously stated by Senator Giesel, is when a child has scientifically been shown to feel pain. Among those countries of seven is North Korea and China. So I'd also like to make a note that a child in the womb is a separate body with separate DNA than the mother. It is not the mother's body to be removed like a tumor. And I will leave you with a quote from President Ronald Reagan. I notice that everyone who supports abortion has already been born. Thank you so much for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Eden. Next, we'll go to the Anchorage LIO, and we'll start with Zena Peterson. If you can state your name and affiliation for the record and plan for 2 minutes to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Zena Peterson. I live in Anchorage, Senate District I, and I'm here representing myself. Today I'm testifying against Senate Bill 124 because I believe that the decision to have an abortion should be left between the doctor and the patient. This bill is upsetting. In Alaska, it's already hard to get access to reproductive health care, comprehensive sexual education, and, of course, abortion. The barriers already put in place are infringing our legal right to have an abortion, and this bill is just one of many that restricts those same rights. The decision to get an abortion is not an easy one, but it should be made with the care of a trusted physician and family. This bill would not only come between a patient and their right to a legal, safe abortion, but it would also penalize doctors for doing their job. Physicians have worked hard to get where they're at today by forcing them to alter how they practice medicine, abandon their own judgment, and possibly face criminal penalties is just wrong. Instead, I propose we focus on funding more programs that teach medically accurate sexual education and healthy relationships to avoid unintended pregnancies. I want to thank the Senate Health and Social Services Committee for letting me testify today, and I urge all of you to vote no on Senate Bill 124. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson. Next up is Bessie Odom.
For the record, my name is Bessie Odom, and I live in Senate District N here in Anchorage. With proposed legislation like SB 124, we are truly not listening to all of the Alaskans. This includes women of urban and rural Alaska. Women need the assurance that they will not be deterred or prevented from seeking care because of policies that are in place. We should also be highly concerned about the risk we are putting the women of our various communities in. SB 124 would not only force women to carry pregnancies to term, regardless of their wishes, but it jeopardizes the health of the woman. The fact that complications of a pregnancy can cause death of both the mother and the baby, anywhere from pregnancy to labor and postpartum, should not be overlooked. There has been situations where mothers genuinely needed a choice to choose between an abortion and their own lives. If the woman has children already, this is a choice she must seriously ponder for the sake of her family and her well-being. Please, let's keep the lives of all of these women in mind from this day forward. This bill simply fails to consider the mother and her health. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Odom. Next is Robin Smith from Anchorage LIO.
Hi, my name is Robin Smith, and I want to thank the committee for allowing me to be heard. I am greatly disappointed that Senator Giesel is bringing this bill forward. Alaska is struggling to finance our government, and yet she is wasting Alaskans' time and money by not focusing on our very first priority. She is also part of the Republican coalition that reduced children's PFD to fund the government, taking literally potentially food and health care and educational options away from kids. We also have cut school funding, and we also have reduced money going to Health and Human Services. Yet here we are attempting to restrict the women's access to abortion. I agree with all those people who have spoken ahead of time, but I want to point out that those seeking abortions later is usually adolescents or women who have a life-threatening health circumstance, or the fetus has severe anomalies or impairment. So, and the reason that the adolescents don't move forward with abortions is because, first of all, you know, they want to deny the fact that they're pregnant. This country has put so much shame on adolescents that they want to deny it, and they fear the response of their parents. So then there's the cost. And then on top of the cost, do they have access? If you're in rural Alaska, there is not access to an abortion provider. So this is really, really different. In our society, you know, it's only women who are viewed as morally, it's only pregnant women who are viewed as morally incompetent. You don't force mothers or fathers to put their life at risk if a child needs, a kidney or an eye or part of a liver.
Smith, if you could...
We don't demand that the parents donate those things.
Ms. Smith?
We demand that women put their life at risk if they're pregnant, and we're trying to force this. It's paramount that the woman's health must be considered first.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Okay, thank you, Ms. Smith. If you could wrap up your comments to relating back to the bill, please.
Thank you.
Just want to remind folks that are testifying if they could stick to the comments related to the bill or relate your comments directly to Senate Bill 124. It would be wonderful. Our next caller is Karen Perry in Chugach. Ms. Perry, if you can state your name and affiliation for the record and plan on 2 minutes for testifying.
Yes, hi. My name is Karen Perry, and I'm representing myself and all human life yet to be born. I oppose this bill, but not for the reasons that Planned Parenthood and pro-death people oppose it. I oppose it because it is a murder bill. It is a ridiculous bill which purports to be pro-life but actually condones murder. Just read the title of the bill. Abortion is child sacrifice. You can work to abolish it, but instead you choose not to. Instead, you are choosing to deceive people. I find it deceitful and evil of both Kathy Geisel and Kathy Tilton in the House to sponsor pro-death bills. That is not what your party platform states you are supporting. Why not support instead a companion bill to House Bill 250, which is Protect Life at Conception Bill? Now I want to read some comments from a friend of mine, and this is what he wrote. There is a battle. Jesus is our Lord and King. You have two choices. Remain silent and at peace with the fact that 5 babies are being murdered every day, and this bill does nothing to stop that. And it's protected by Alaska statutes, and those with the ability, which is you, to change them. You can repent of not being engaged and draw the sword, which is the word of God. If you do not join in the battle, you are the reason that baby murder is sanctioned. You are actually sanctioning baby murder with this bill and not protecting life. Psalm 94 verses 20 and 21 state this, and I pray that you will take heart. Can a throne of destruction be allied with you, one of which devises mischief by decree? They band themselves together against the life of the righteous and condemn the innocent to death. With this bill, you are doing nothing more than continuing to condemn innocent to death. Pull this bill and sponsor a companion bill to HB 250. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Perry. Seeing that no other signed up online, is there anyone else in the room in Juneau that has not signed up to testify that would like to testify at this time?
All right.
Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close testimony on Senate Bill 124. Are there any other questions from committee members for the bill sponsor at this time? Hearing none, is there any other further discussion on the bill?
I'm getting at ease, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, at ease. Back on the record, were there any other further discussion for this bill? Are there any amendments for this bill at this time? Is there a motion to move this bill out of committee? Senator Machicki?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I frankly believe this is much less of the Department on Health and Social Services bill than it is a bill that needs to be reviewed by Judiciary. And I'm going to move that Senate Bill 124, version 30-LS0429/U, get moved from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes to Judiciary.
I object.
Senator Begich, you want to speak to your interpretation?
Just briefly, I'm objecting for two reasons. One, so that we might vote on the bill and do a roll call vote. But the second reason I'm objecting is I heard nothing in the testimony, not one person who testified from either the folks who opposed this bill for reasons of the position of privacy, or those who opposed it from a position of opposing abortion, and nobody supported this bill, so I'm not sure that we're ready to move the bill out if there's no support for the bill. I think we have an obligation in that regard to consider whether we pass the bill out for those reasons, but that's my primary reason for my objection.
And I'll speak to a little bit of the matter. For me personally, this bill, some of the questions that were raised in testimony and raised by some committee members had to do with some of the liability, some of the legal questions, constitutionality of that, and I feel that's best handled in the next committee of referral, which is Judiciary at this time. Any other comments, Senator?
I disagree with you. It's the very things you list is not what we do here. I actually am not sure that this was an appropriate first stop, but being that that's where it is, I think Judiciary is the appropriate body to review the legalities and most of what we heard today, both sides of the issue, which is the true definition of strange bedfellows in this case. So that's my reason for moving it to the next, to Judiciary.
All right. At this time, we'll ask Ms. Jeannie Freud from Senate Records to do a roll call vote.
Yes.
Senator Von
Eenhoff?
No rec.
This is...
It's a yes or no.
It's just to move it.
No. It's just to move it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Senator Michiki?
Yes.
Senator Begich?
Nope.
Chair Wilson?
Yes.
So, three yeas, two nays.
No, there's one nay.
Taking it. At ease. Fine. Okay. We'll go back on record.
Four yeas, move the bill, one nay.
Thank you, Ms. Farr. At this time, with four yeas and one nay, Senate Bill 124 will move on to the next committee of referral. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. This time, are there any closing comments from committee members? Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a very quick one. Last year, we had public hearing on a couple of bills. One of those bills in particular, we had discussed maybe reopening that public hearing, and that was on SB 72, and I'm just hoping that at some point we'll be able to reopen public hearing on that bill as we discussed in committee at the end of last year.
And Senator Begich, that would require the bill sponsor to recontact our office and go through that whole process again for folks in the public, just to let them know the process.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Michiki.
For the record, can we describe the general purpose of the bill for the public who doesn't
follow
the numbers?
That was the SB 40, SB 72 was I'm sorry about that, Senator Michiki, was Senator Gardner's bill regarding transgender rights. We were in the middle of a series of public hearings, and it was prematurely closed. You might remember that occurring in a meeting on a Friday evening.
Thank you. And just like I said, when going into the next session, we just need to get a new sponsor
request
for the bill hearing.
Appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any other committee members' comments at this time? All right. That concludes our business today for the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. On Wednesday, February 21st, we'll take up Senate Bill 174, Programs for Persons with Disabilities, by Senator Michicki. Thank you for attending today, and we are adjourned at 2:59 p.m.